After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And these are Triple H's words, and they ring so true. He has no business being as good as he is. And every single match, he looks like he's been doing this for 10, 15, 20 years.
Welcome to the Lightweights Podcast. My name's Joe. Today we have my fellow wrestling cohort, Chris Van Vliet.
Chris Van Vliet in Miami alongside...
Well, you know, it's the big show.
Everybody always asks me like, hey, what do you want to do for WrestleMania? Or what do you want? Who's your dream opponent?
We're not used to seeing you in a suit and tie, though. How you feeling?
You know we got about 47 uncles and...
That's cousin.
Man, go ahead.
Huh, yeah.
If you don't know Chris, he's an amazing podcaster and interviews a lot of pro wrestlers on his podcast. Does all the red carpets from Jake Gyllenhaal, Anne Hathaway, The Rock, John Cena. The man's talked to everybody.
And from behind, you just see that Ric Flair hair, that legendary flow.
This is one of my favorite conversations as we really get to find out how he did it and some behind-the-scenes secrets of wrestling superstars. So if you haven't yet, hit the subscribe button. We're almost at 30,000 subscribers. Leave a like and comment down below who else you want to see on the pod. Without further ado, Chris Van Vliet. This is a long list. Bradley Cooper, Quentin Tarantino, Zendaya, Shia LaBeouf, Hugh Jackman, Ronda Rousey, MGK, Anne Hathaway, The Rock, Ryan Reynolds, Jake Gyllenhaal. The amount of people that you sat with and asked questions and know everything about is insane. In our conversation with John Cena.
What a list, by the way. Thank
you for
that.
That's your list. That's your list.
Yeah, wow. Dude. By the way, thank you for having me here. I want to just say before we dive into this, congrats on everything that you've built. This is not easy. This is not easy at all to do. And the fact that you have built this up to be as big as it is, I think that needs some acknowledgement. So congrats.
Likewise to you, because when we met last couple weeks ago, once I like dove into it, your career has been so extensive and very impressive.
Yours as well, by the way. But thank you. I feel like I'm still just getting started here.
So you've been doing it for how long?
I started in radio in 2004, and I started in TV the next year, 2005. So I was still in college when I got that radio job. And like, long story, very short here, I had this epiphany in my senior year of college. I wanted to like make sure that I didn't hate my job. I woke up one day and I was like, oh my God, we graduate the end of this year. Like, that's like, I can't even fathom this idea that I'm going to have to go work for, you know, the rest of my life. And in that exact moment, I was like, I just don't want to hate my job. And it wasn't that I want to love my job. It's just, I don't want to wake up every day dreading going to work. Reached out to every radio station, every TV station in my college town. And one of them finally said like, yeah, sure. Come on in. Like, we'll find a job for you. So I was working in radio as a board operator, like, you know, on the knobs on the board. That was my very first job. And then I graduated, got an internship at a TV station that turned into a job. And here we are now.
Did you have any goals then? Because for me, my only goal was that I wanted to be able to wear sweatpants any day of the week.
You're not even wearing sweatpants.
This is the 1 hour that I can't.
My goal was literally just to not hate my job. And that's evolved now to my goal every day now is to be excited for what I'm going to do at the start of the day. And to be proud of what I've done at the end of the day. That's it. The goal at that time was like, it seemed like such a massive goal to be on TV. Because there's not that many people that get that opportunity, especially in Canada, where I'm from. That was the goal. The goal was like, could I be on TV? I don't know, but I'm going to try really, really, really hard at 21, 22, 23 years old. And if it doesn't work out, at least when I'm 70 or 80, I can look back and go, man, I tried so hard. It didn't work out, but I'm doing this other thing now.
Do you view yourself differently now than when you first started? Do you feel like you've more niched as the wrestling killer.
I kill wrestlers. Yeah. That sounds like the name of like a serial killer.
That's your movie, your documentary coming out this Netflix.
The Wrestling Killer.
This summer on Netflix.
I mean, yes, for sure. But most of that's because broadcasting has changed so much. So when I was in college, in getting that radio job in 2004 and starting in TV in 2005, the internet wasn't nearly what it is now.
Was it even on your radar?
No, of course not. No, not at all. Like, I was a wrestling fan. I wanted to be a pro wrestler.
Because even my friends, I remember in 2007, said, I want to make a wrestling podcast and interview all the wrestlers. They never did it. But was that ever on your mind that you wanted to hop on that?
Not even a little bit. Because it wasn't sustainable at that point in time. Like, YouTube was very much in its infancy when I was just a few years into my television career. Social media really didn't exist. Like, MySpace was there, but there was no way to monetize that. Facebook was there, but same, really, that was just a way to connect with people. It wasn't probably to the last 7 to 10 years that doing anything with social media would even seem like it could be a career. So yeah, my career has changed a ton. I like to think that old school model of broadcasting is very broad, right? Like, broadcasting used to be, when you were bored, you turned on the TV, you flicked channels till you saw something that I could watch this for the next 28 minutes. Now it's like, man, if you're a fan of a certain band or artist, or you're a fan of a certain actor, you can dive deep in YouTube and just watch that for hours on end. That did not exist. It has gone from broadcasting very much now to niche casting, right? Like, the fact that I can have a podcast about pro wrestling is the wildest thing ever.
At what point in your career did you realize that switch happened?
2019 was probably the year when I was like, I think that this could be a thing.
Was it a conscious decision that you were like, I'm going to put so much of my time into this to grow this?
So I was working a full-time job. I was on the Fox TV station in Miami. I was hosting an amazing entertainment show called Deco Drive. Traveling the world, talking to the biggest stars on the planet.
Like, who are these stars?
Tom Cruise, Morgan Freeman, Julia Roberts, George Clooney, Oprah Winfrey, Henry Cavill. Like, the list goes on and on and on and on. And in my spare time, I was interviewing wrestlers for my YouTube channel. And some of those were doing pretty well. Like, some of those were getting hundreds of thousands of views. Some of them even more. And that dated back to, like, I had access from working at a TV station. So 10, 12 years ago, I'm working at a TV station in Cleveland, and you're interviewing people from all different walks of entertainment. You're interviewing actors, comedians, directors. Every once in a while, WWE would come to town and I'd reach out to them and say, hey, could we interview whoever's available?
On behalf of the news station?
Exactly. And we'll air a clip on the news station. And then selfishly, me as a wrestling fan,
kept the 10-minute interview to yourself.
So we'd air a 30-second clip, right? Like, Raw's in town, tickets start at $20 or whatever.
In classic news fashion.
Of course. Then the other 9.5 minutes or 15.5 minutes of that interview would be me, hardcore wrestling fan, lifelong wrestling fan, asking like super in-depth questions, right? And I knew there'd be other wrestling fans out there that would like love this type of stuff. So we aired that short little clip that was pertinent to the show they were promoting on TV. And then I aired the full Raw interview on my YouTube channel. And sometimes like those were getting way more views than I could ever imagine. And we were breaking a lot of news from those interviews just because nobody else at that time, we're talking 2011, 2012, was asking those kind of questions.
To superstars.
Exactly. So this is WWE and a lot of TNA as well. So fast forward then to 2019, back to what we were talking about, I was like, what if I was doing this not just when WWE or TNA was in town? What if when an independent wrestling company had a big name in town, I reached out to them and said, hey, would you mind if I interviewed that person and then also promoted your company?
Was this on behalf of the news station or was this for your own channels?
At this time, it was for my own channel. And it just kind of kept building, right? Like, people were coming to my channel because, yeah, there were some interesting celebrity interviews, But they were like, man, this guy really likes wrestling.
Do you recall who of those superstars you reached out to for those independent ones?
Sure, yeah. Like Christopher Daniels was a big one when I was in Cleveland. I remember Rhino being at a show when I was in Cleveland. I remember, like, on behalf of the TV station, getting credentials to cover WrestleMania Access in Atlanta. This is way back. Like, that's the very first wrestling interview on my YouTube channel. WrestleMania Access 2011. So it was WrestleMania 27. And I interviewed, like, Cody and Dolph Ziggler there. On, like, remember the old flip cams?
Yeah.
The flip cam before, like, you know, you were really recording stuff on your iPhone?
Yeah.
So yeah, there were some interviews there. Jeff Hardy came by when he was with TNA. Jeff Jarrett was paired with Eric Young at that time in TNA. Like, there were just some interviews like that, yeah.
When you're interviewing Oprah, Bradley Cooper, Jake Gyllenhaal, you know so much about them. Is that all of your own extensive research?
I guess. But I think what it is those interviews are so short. Those interviews are like 4 or 5 minutes long.
And are you submitting those questions to...
No.
You got to just ramble on whatever?
Yeah. But those interviews are so short, right? The way that a junket-style interview is set up is the celebrity flies to one spot. So it's often LA, it's sometimes New York. I was just in London 2 days ago to interview Henry Cavill for his new movie.
Who sent you for that?
Lionsgate. So Lionsgate invited me. We've got this new movie coming out in 3 weeks. Do you want to come out and cover it? I still freelance for the CBS station in Las Vegas.
So that was on behalf of them, and you'll use it for your channel as well?
Yeah, exactly. So
how long was that conversation with Henry Cavill?
4 minutes. So here's the thing.
So cool. You flew all the way to London for a four-minute conversation.
I was on the plane longer than I was in London because the flight from here is like 10, 11 hours.
You didn't even spend the night there?
I did spend the night there. So okay. I left Thursday, spent Thursday night on a plane. Got to London Friday at like 1:30
p.m.
Yes. Saw the movie that night. The next morning we did the interview. And then I got on a plane at 1 o'clock that same day.
And are they like, Chris, you have 5 minutes with Henry.
Yeah.
And hard end it.
Very, very hard out.
And is he sitting in the chair and then they're bringing all these different reporters in?
So that's how it works, right? So it might seem like I know a lot about these people, but you only have to fill 4 minutes, right? So you only have to be knowledgeable for those 4 minutes about the 3 or 4 questions that you're going to be asking them. So it's kind of like a cheat code, right? Like, just be super knowledgeable about like this portion of their life and hopefully it'll be a great conversation. When you're doing something like this, where it's an hour long conversation, it's a completely other thing. Like, it's a totally different thing because you've got to know the ins and outs of someone's career. So if they start talking about this movie they filmed 12 years ago, you can kind of follow that path, right? Instead of just jumping to the next question.
So what's your extensive research for that hour-long conversation with Ric Flair?
Oh, we talked a lot. But I mean, it's so hard with someone like that who's had a 50-year career, right? It'd be so hard to dive into like the nooks and crannies of like the things he was doing in like 1970 something, right?
So you as an interviewer, how do you approach it?
You just try to learn as much as you can. And I think that it always starts with questions first, right? And you know this, you're a great interviewer. It starts with curiosity and questions. Like when you think about someone like Ric Flair, or when you think about someone like John Cena and you've got an hour, what are the questions that just immediately pop into your mind? What can you brain dump right now onto the notes section of your iPhone, which I have? Like I just fill the notes section of my iPhone with, man, if I ever interview Roman Reigns, these are some things I'm curious about.
I do that too.
This is why you're so good.
Yeah, because I have those natural questions and then the ones I dig.
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
And that's actually something I started doing recently where like I'll stumble across something and be like, oh, that's a really cool thing. Like, for example, I know I'm going to be talking to Rikishi in the next few weeks. I saw some thing on Facebook.
That's cool.
That during his entrance, he would do this. And apparently he was telling his kids at home, I'm thinking about you. I'm going to touch my nose during my entrance. And that just means I'm thinking about you. And his kids, by the way, are, you know, the Usos and Solo Sikoa.
Wow.
So I wrote that down. I'm like, that'll be a great story to get from him.
Have you ever been to his wrestling school? Because that's right over here.
It's right around here, right? No, I haven't been yet. No.
You've been in the ring with John Moore. This episode is sponsored by Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning platform available on desktop or as an app, and that it truly immersifies you in the language that you want to learn. Maybe you have an upcoming international trip or you want to connect with a family or a friend. I know a lot of people who want to learn a new language just to pick up a new hobby. I can personally attest to this as I used Rosetta Stone when I went to Italy for my honeymoon. It helped me brush up on the Italian that I learned back in school, and I was able to get through the land and speak the native language. It made it so much more fun, plus my wife loved it. They're the trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. Spanish, French, Italian, German, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Dutch, Arabic, Polish. There's no English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in the language. Plus, there's lifetime membership and access to all 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off. A steal. Don't put off that language learning. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Lightweight's podcast listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language learning courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. It's the Joe Guarantee. In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking we could pull one of the best autographs in the game, but guess what? With zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com. The only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs on Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. What I love is the display of the available cards, the hit rates, and the grading. Arena is a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying. And with Arena Club Slab Packs, they're revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling. You can have them officially graded by Arena Club. The Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with a full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform you have to check out. Right now, you can get 10% off your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/lightweights. Wow, that's a crazy offer. 10% off a $400 slab pack. That's $40 right there. Anyways, go to arenaclub.com/lightweights for 10% off your first purchase.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I've been in John Morrison's ring with John Morrison.
How was that?
I mean, that guy's the best. He had a ring in his backyard.
Did you take any bumps from him?
I did. Yeah, I took some bumps, ran the ropes. He taught me how to do a springboard and was surprised when I was able to first try somehow do it.
Yeah.
Not fall on my face. I trained to be a wrestler. I wanted to be a pro wrestler so badly in high school. That was one of my goals.
WWE pro wrestler.
Yeah, that was one of my dreams. I was a backyard wrestler. There are clips of me as Chris Sharp, my backyard wrestling persona.
Flaming tables, high ladders.
Flaming tables, no.
Oh.
Ladders, yeah, they weren't that high. But yeah, I was like doing swanton bombs off of ladders. And I was doing a lot of tombstones, a lot of stuff. So those clips are out there. Then when I was in college, I went to wrestling school. So like I did it. I was on that path.
Are you watching every wrestling show throughout the week?
I don't know if anybody can watch every wrestling show throughout the week. And this is just such a testament to what a great time it is to be a wrestling fan right now. There is wrestling on literally every day of the week.
What would you say this era is?
Like, what are we going to call this era?
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's a tough question. We're definitely in a new era right now. There's a lot of names you could call this. The Triple H era makes sense because really a lot of the big changes that are happening in WWE are happening as a result of Triple H being the one in charge. And I think you could point a finger directly at SummerSlam 2022 and go, that pay-per-view, or PLE, whatever you want to call it, that felt a little bit different. That felt different because Hunter was the one in charge there. I think this is either going to be called the Renaissance era because there's just this, you know, rejuvenated interest in wrestling right now. A lot of lapsed fans are coming back around here. It's exciting.
Do you think it is?
It also might be called the global era because I feel like they're taking a page right out of the UFC's book, which makes sense. It's the same ownership now. Also taking a page out of the NFL's book. Like,
in what way?
As we sit here right now, there are PLEs in Berlin, France, Australia, Canada. Like, it's going global. They're trying to just expand out the audience and try to hit as many places as they can.
And prior, this wasn't like that.
Not as often. No, it wasn't happening. It was one or two a year, maybe.
Do you think wrestling's making its way back into pop culture how it used to be?
It definitely is. I do think that pop culture has changed a lot, though. Like, when wrestling was at its, you know, the fever pitch of the Attitude Era in the late 90s with the Monday Night Wars, it was a different time, right? Like, people weren't able to immediately go on Twitter and talk about the things they were seeing. You watched Raw or Nitro, and then you had to wait the next day to see your friends at school and then talk about, oh my gosh, did you see that thing that happened last night? So I think that pop culture has changed a lot. But the fact that someone who doesn't watch wrestling at all right now, but happens to follow The Rock on Instagram, knows about wrestling. Like, The Rock is like promoting this in such a big way, and he's showing this thing happened on SmackDown. I'm going to be on Raw this week. So I don't know if it's that. It's like, I don't think you could walk down the street and ask someone like, who's the WWE champion, and they'd be able to tell you. But I think they're aware that, like, there's something going on here with wrestling.
With The Rock coming back as a super fan, how does that make you feel?
It was exciting. Because The Rock had come back here and there, you know, for like these one-off appearances.
Yeah.
And it was cool. Like, it was cool to see The Rock, and he would cut a fun promo, and then he'd leave, and we wouldn't see him for a couple of years. When The Rock came back on day one, which was that episode on January 1st, and we were like, oh, there's something here. Like, I think The Rock's going to stick around for a little while. And then we kept getting The Rock. And this, I think, is some of The Rock's best work. And I don't just mean as The Rock. Like, this is some of Dwayne Johnson's best work. Like, he is so good at making people dislike him right now. And he does it in such a funny way, too.
How do you think the wrestling world views your interviews?
Oh, I don't know. I don't make my content as I crack open this F3 energy. That's what the sound was. I don't really make my content for other people. I make my content, like, I ask the questions that I'm genuinely curious about. So I don't know. I don't know how people view it. I hope that they enjoy these conversations as much as I enjoy having them. That's really what it comes down to.
Have you ever had anybody on that you weren't that interested in?
Not really. Like, I feel like everybody has such an interesting story.
When you have the Henry Cavill video, how are you going to post that on your channels?
I think I'll just post a clip or two.
On your Clips channel or your main channel?
On the Clips channel.
Because it's a 5-minute interview?
Yeah, and I have posted, like, some of these celebrity interviews on my main channel, and it's just amazing that people just, my audience is so wrestling focused that, of course, there's an overlap with the Venn diagram of, like, people who like wrestling and people who like Chris Hemsworth, because I posted an interview with him. It just didn't do great. So I'll probably just post, there's a few interesting things we talked about there. I'll just post those as clips, and hopefully they do well. Like, I posted a clip with an actor named William Fichtner, who you might not know his name, but you would definitely know his work. And I'm like, man, what a legend to be talking to, because he's had such an incredible career. The guy was in Heat. The guy was in The Dark Knight. He's part of that opening sequence in The Dark Knight where they're trying to rob the mob bank, and he's the guy with the shotgun, the bank manager. You don't know who you guys are stealing from. You and your friends are dead. That line. So I was interviewing him for something else, and I was like, I got to ask you about being part of arguably one of the greatest opening sequences in modern cinema. And he gave me this wonderful answer about it, and I posted just that clip. And it got millions of views because it was so relatable, right? Everybody loves The Dark Knight. That scene's so iconic. So it's like, when you can hammer in on things like that, that appeal to like a mass audience, I think that's when you can win with stuff like that.
Who is on your wrestling list that you want to interview?
There's a bunch. There's a bunch that I still haven't interviewed. Paul Heyman, Randy Orton, AJ Styles, Sami Zayn. Like, the list goes on and on, and I'm sure that some of these will happen at some point in time, but there's a bunch.
What are some of the biggest missed opportunities of interviews that you've had?
Like, they were supposed to happen, and then it just didn't
line up. Like, before we were saying Sum 41 almost came here, and St. Clown Posse almost came here, but, like, timing, people don't feel well. Is there any situations like that where it didn't happen, but it was supposed to?
I feel like all of those are just like, they just didn't happen at that point in time. But now there's like, it
has happened.
Right. It just like got pushed back, right? Like, oh, I know I said yes, but I'm not going to be in town now. Or like, I know we talked about this, but I'm, you know, not feeling well. Like I was supposed to do something with Becky Lynch like last week. And she's like, we're not coming into LA anymore, but we're definitely going to do this. And I'm like, okay. Like, and I'm a big person. I don't know if you're the same way, but I'm like, let's set a date and a time. Like, let's put this on the calendar. So like, I think we got it on the calendar now for Philly and WrestleMania. So I'm like, okay, like we're going to do it there. I also got a message from, I don't even know if I should be putting this out there, but I'm hoping that it all like works out. But like Randy Orton was like, yes, we will do an interview. I don't know when, but like, we'll do an interview and like, just get it approved by WWE, but I'll say yes. So like, I've got the yes from him, but now we don't have the more important part, which is like the date on the calendar. So I don't know if I've had like, I haven't had too many opportunities where it's like, you're there, you're ready to go. And then like last minute, oh, sorry.
Timing just didn't work.
It's always been like, I know we said last Tuesday, this is a really busy month, or next Tuesday, this is a really busy month. How about May 5th? How about July 17th? And then, you know, it just keeps getting pushed. So I hope that all of those end up happening.
Have you ever been involved in a pro wrestling show?
Yes. I've been a ring announcer for a bunch of pro wrestling shows.
Were they aired on TV?
I don't know if they were aired on TV. They were, I mean, you can definitely find clips of these on YouTube. I was also part of a storyline when I lived in Cleveland for Pro Wrestling Ohio, or Prime Wrestling it was called at the time, where I had someone wrestling in a match on my behalf. And at the end of the match, I got involved and I gave this massive rock bottom to this wrestler named Nicky Valentino. And he sold it like a champ. He sold it like a champ. I went up like full, did the whole thing like the Rock, bounced up, looked at him. He sold that like a champ. I was also on the first episode of AEW Dynamite. And I was on a few weeks later, I did another segment with AEW Dynamite. So I've done a few things here and there. Like I definitely dipped my toe into that world. But the other foot is firmly planted in the world of like broadcasting and content creation and that type of stuff.
Would you say that's just more beneficial for you right now?
That's where my heart is. Like, I love what I'm doing. Like, I love the conversations that we have on my podcast. I'm so grateful for the opportunities I have to talk to some of the biggest stars on the planet. Like, I don't ever want that to go away.
Can you share your Ric Flair story? When you met him?
Sure. Wow. So what a day that was in Tampa. And I was told specifically to stay at this one hotel because it was across the street from where Rick lived. It's like, sure. Yeah, absolutely. Whatever makes it easiest.
Are you talking through an email with his manager?
I'm texting with his manager. And his manager also manages Hulk Hogan. So it was what a day this was. What a day. It was 10 a.m. with Ric Flair at my hotel room that was all set up, ready to go. And then later that afternoon with Hogan at Hogan's Beach Shop, which is in Clearwater, Florida. He has his own. It's a great bar.
You had both of them in the same day. Were you like geeking out?
Oh my God, was I geeking out.
Are you calling your wife?
I mean, we were planning this for like probably a month. And I'm like, if this actually does happen, this is going to be incredible. Like Flair and Hogan on the same day. And then I'm like, well, while I'm in Tampa, who else can I do here? And I also did like Natalya and TJ Wilson, Mike Chioda. Like this was Baron Corbin. So I did 6 interviews in those 2 days.
When did it feel real? When you stepped on the plane? Like it was happening?
No, it felt real when Flair showed up at like 9:59.
Oh, so you even before that, you were like,
uh-huh. Well, I'm like, you know, when you're at that level of fame, do you need to show up on time? And, you know, like if he had showed up late, that would have thrown off the entire day. But when Ric Flair showed up at 9:59, I meet him down in the lobby and like shake his hand. Hey, good to meet you, man.
By himself?
Yeah, he was by himself. His manager was with me. And then he's like, okay, let's go down and get Ric. So then we went down and got Ric. And Ric's walking through the lobby and like checking out the women that are working at the hotel in classic Ric Flair fashion. We do the interview. And during the interview, he's like, you know, every day, 5 o'clock, I'm at that bar across the street. Come on by. And I'm like, drinking with Ric Flair? Like, are you serious? He's like, no, I'm serious. If you want to come by.
You didn't have another conversation at that time?
I'll be there at 5 o'clock. So like, I was like, oh, like he's serious about this. Then we went and did the interview with Hulk Hogan, which was fantastic. I've talked to the Hulkster a few times. He's great. I really enjoy those conversations with him because there's just a sense of like openness with him. So then we drive into Clearwater Beach. We do that interview with Hogan. We drive back and it's like, whatever, 5:15 at this point. I'm like, I said to my camera guy, I'm like, I think I'm going to do it. Like, I'm going to swing by the bar. He's like, yeah, man, do it. Like, what a story that'll be. Sure enough, walk into the bar and from behind, you just see that Ric Flair hair, that legendary flow. And to his left are two beautiful women. To his right are two other beautiful women. Like, this is Ric Flair. I tapped him on the shoulder from behind. I'm like, I'm here. He's like, oh, it's great to see you, man. He goes, what are you drinking? I said, what are you drinking? And he was, what was he having? Was it a, I think it was a vodka soda with a splash of cranberry. And I'm like, if that's what Ric Flair drinks, then that's what I'm drinking. And he's like, well, let's do it. So he bought me a drink. I was chatting with him. Mike Chioda was also there, who I'm friends with. I was chatting with Mike and his wife. And then Ric ended up leaving for the night. And I went to order some food and I went to pay. And they go, no, this is taken care of. I said, no. I'll get it. No, this has already been taken care of. Your bill is $0. I'm like, no, I'll pay. Sir, there is nothing to pay for. So he took care of like everyone that was sitting around us. He took care of all of their food, all their drinks.
He's always been known for that.
Yeah, and then he just kind of like left. And there was no like, he didn't make an announcement like, I've got you, whatever you guys want. He just quietly did it. And then he left, took some photos on the way out. And then it was just a lovely surprise if, you know, 20 minutes later when I found out there was nothing to pay for.
Right.
What a guy.
So when you do something like that, are you thinking in your head to do another interview with him in like 6 months or a year? Or has it been done, on to the next?
I mean, if I could ever have the opportunity to do something with him again, of course I would do that. But I think in that moment, you kind of know that like you're getting a really special thing here. Like an hour with a legend like that. I'm not thinking ahead like I'm going to save some questions because in 6 months, I might have the chance to possibly do this again. Oh, no. I'm trying to have the best possible conversation that I can have in that moment. And if it happens again one day, great. We'll reassess and figure that situation out at that point in time. But I'm never thinking ahead to like, all right, let's make sure we can do this again one day. I'm just like, I am grateful for this opportunity we have in front of us. And let's make the most of this chance that we have.
Did either of them have a big aura around them that you were just with a star?
Oh, yeah. Especially the Hulkster. Like, that guy has, this is funny about him. He walked in and he introduced himself. I mean, I'd met him before, but he introduced himself to Harry, my camera guy, as Terry. Like, oh, Harry and Terry. And like, there's this aura that he's larger than life. And like Hulk Hogan is quite literally like a large man. And he's got, you know, the trademark mustache. He's always wearing the bandana. Like, that's Hulk Hogan, right? And everywhere he goes, he's getting recognized by everybody. So yeah. There is definitely a sense of like, this person's on another level in terms of their fame.
Who else had that in the celebrity world outside of wrestling?
Well, I mean, he straddles the line, but The Rock definitely has that. Like, The Rock has this presence that when he comes into the room, you know he's there. But it's also this like, this real humble charisma that he has. Like, the very first time I interviewed The Rock, it was backstage at Raw. This is 2012 when he was promoting Rock versus Cena, WrestleMania 28. And I got him backstage at Raw in Cleveland. So he was promoting all these other movies. He was doing these junket interviews. I got him in the place that I...
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
like knew him best for as a kid. Like that was the place where I fell in love with what The Rock did. He walked into the room and there must have been 12, 15 of us in the room. And he walked up to everybody, shook their hand. Hey, I'm Dwayne. Good to meet you. I'm Dwayne. Nice to meet you. I'm Dwayne. Good to meet you. But he had this big presence when he walked in the room. Yeah, it's undeniable.
Have you done interviews with Triple H?
I've never done an interview with Triple H. Have you?
No.
Is that who's on your wrestling list? Who have you not got yet that you want to get?
I've only had five people on.
Really?
Yeah.
You are starting to become a big wrestling podcaster, though.
I would love that. That's the dream.
So you've had Kathy Kelly, Maxine Dupree twice, Chelsea Green, Natalya,
and Kayla Braxton. Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm in talks with other people.
Taya.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. I'm in talks with other people, but it hasn't happened yet, obviously.
Yeah.
But it will. And it's just such a fun world to dive into.
Especially if you're a fan.
Yeah.
Right?
I used to watch religiously. I remember wrestling with my friends, flipping on the Monday Night Wars, going back and forth.
Yeah.
Staying home on Friday nights, watching SmackDown. Like, that was the life.
This is one of the coolest things about the space that both of us operate in, is you can take your interests and with the access that you have through this show or any other outlets you might have, you're able to reach out to your favorite band or you're able to reach out to your favorite actor or comedian and go, hey, I'd love to have you on the show, which is obviously, you know, the most important part of this pitch. But then kind of secretly behind the scenes, you're just like, dude, I get to hang out with so-and-so.
That's all this has been my entire life.
It's the best.
I made this website up and I wanted to do band interviews and I bought the domain and I sent an email to the main back in 2010, maybe 2011, because they were coming to town. I got an interview with them and it went, I was doing other interviews with other people and like, I'd get like one person, they'd be 30 minutes late and then I'd end up with like the drummer and not the singer. Mm. And it was like, It was whatever. But when I got to the main, I walked into the bus and all five of them were just standing there staring at me. I'm like, hey. And they're like, hey, and introduce everybody. And I said, who am I talking with? And they said, all of us. And I
was like,
that's cool. So my original interview from my 10 questions to the one person, I split up two questions to each person.
Wow.
They really liked it. They invited me to stay for the show. So I'm sitting around like 3 hours by myself waiting for the show to happen. They gave me all access. They let me walk in with them as they do their little huddle.
Wow.
They go on the stage. I'm on stage with the drummer and he's like, he's playing drums. He's like, John's in the crowd. So I'm like, where? I walk into the crowd and John's singing in the crowd with everybody.
Wow.
And for me, that was just the dream of meeting the main and hanging out with them and being on their turf and what they do. And they're letting me do what I do to help them and they help me. It's like the best feeling in the world.
Yes.
And I've been to every single show filming stuff with them ever since on their YouTube channel. And it's amazing.
Ah, that's amazing.
They're the coolest guys. And I saw you have them on your channel.
That was forever ago.
12 years ago.
And that was really just because I'm a huge pop punk fan. So when I saw that the main was coming to House of Blues in Cleveland and I was living in Cleveland, I was just like, man, we could do an interview with them. We'll air 20 seconds on the news station, but then I get to hang out with the main. Like, and that's kind of been the whole thing in this job is like, yes, you do what the job is required 100%, but there's so many opportunities when you can just like kind of put your own like personality into it and be like, my boss isn't even talking about this thing that's happening. Let's see. Can we do an interview with Chris Caraba from Dashboard?
I just reached out to him.
He'll do it. For sure he'll do it. And my boss, this was also in Miami when I was working there. My boss was like, yeah, if that's a band you like, absolutely. See if you can reach out to them. And I was like, this is just so cool.
It was so much easier too than it ended up being. Even like when Simple Plan came here, I'm like, I think the first thing I said to him was, I can't believe you're here.
Pierre?
Yeah. Because he's Pierre. And like I was working on it for like maybe a year or two of trying to make it happen. And like he walked in and my garage wasn't shutting and he's like fixing the garage. I'm like, this is nuts.
And I think we forget that at the end of the day, these are just people, right? These are just people who had a massive goal, a massive dream, and didn't stop until they accomplished it. And I think that unfortunately, in the world of social media that we live in, we don't see the struggle a lot of the time. We just see the end result. We just see that singer on stage in front of thousands of people. We just see Tom Brady with 7 Super Bowl rings. We don't see the struggles. So I love when we can have conversations like this and you can see like, oh, it wasn't always that easy. Oh, you guys played in front of 7 people? Wow. You toured and didn't get paid for these shows? Like, and you had to pay for your own gas money? I love hearing stories like that because someone who's early on in their journey can relate to that. And they can go, oh, wow, if that person who's so successful struggled early on and I'm there right now, that means there's a path for me somewhere along the way that I can follow.
It was so bizarre when you reached out to me because I was listening to your episode with Chelsea Green.
What?
And I was
listening to your episode with Maxine.
Yeah. What did you take away from mine? I'm just curious.
Oh, there was a lot of like great nuggets there. You're just such a good conversationalist. And Maxine hasn't done a lot of like long form interviews.
I think I was her first one.
I think
in
so.
Person.
And I think I was like her second one.
Yeah.
In person.
When you do that, you're just like trying to understand the feel for them and get like their cadences of how they want to respond to
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. Like I'm never trying to like, oh, they asked that question. That's really good. Like I'll put that into my arsenal now.
Yeah.
But if there's like, if there's a story they tell that then raises questions in my mind.
Oh, I'm the same way, yeah.
I'll often be like, I heard you telling this story about this thing, but it made me really curious, like blah, 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 whatever that happens to be. So I love when I'm on my way, it's now like an hour drive in LA from where we live, I will listen to someone's episode on a podcast and it kind of feels like they're in the car with me. So I'm interviewing Will Sasso on Wednesday. He's hilarious, right? He's been on my show before. But I'm gonna listen to that interview of him on the way in, and it just kind of like preps you up a little bit for it, and it kind of just puts you in that mindset of like, oh, I've already been hanging out with him for an hour.
I'm the same way. all my friends are like, do you feel like uncomfortable? Like, no, I've like listened to like 6 of their podcasts. I feel like we're friends already.
Did we just become best friends?
Yup. That's nuts.
There's something about also like the moment you meet someone. Of just like building that rapport as quickly as you possibly can. Like trying to build that rapport. And like, I did this early on when I was a news reporter and I would be interviewing a wrestler, but I wanted them to know, like, I'm not just a news reporter. Like I'm a huge wrestling fan.
I'm one of you.
So like they'd come in and I would be like, oh man, like Jeff Hardy comes in. Oh man, TLC 2, WrestleMania 17. I can't believe that spear off the ladder. And they'd be, oh wow. It's like, you're speaking my language. Wow. Like, you know, you're in a, like, it's like I'm speaking their native language. Like, I don't have to dumb this down for you. Like, you get it.
Yeah.
Oh, amazing.
You've done so many of these wrestling interviews. Are you on like a text basis with a lot of people? Of like, hey, I saw you're in town. Do you want to do another one?
Some of them, either text or DM.
Yeah.
But there's still a ton of them where I have to like go through the proper channels and really cross my fingers and hope we can make this happen.
Has WWE or AEW ever reached out to you on doing more or anything?
Yeah.
Like special stuff?
Yeah, definitely. A lot of those have been like so-and-so's in town, or I mean, this was a huge one last year. I still can't even, saying this out loud doesn't even feel real. They reached out to me out of nowhere, WWE, and said, this isn't a for sure thing, but I want to put this on your radar. The Undertaker's going to be doing interviews next week to promote his One Dead Man show. So this isn't for sure, but if it does happen, it'll be next Tuesday. And I'm like, you're done. 1,000%. Yes. Yes. And I didn't hear anything from them until like the Monday before. And they were like 10 a.m.
Are you blocking
tomorrow.
Out that whole day?
Of course.
Like just in case.
Yes.
You're doing all the research.
It was a huge interview.
So what happens?
And then the Monday they said, all right, tomorrow 10 a.m. And I was like, yes, yes. Like, 20 minutes at 10 a.m. And I'm
where
like,
where is
done.
This?
Zoom.
Okay.
Zoom, unfortunately. But after the interview, as we were wrapping up, he's like, oh man, I really enjoyed that. We should run it back sometime. And I'm like, I'd love to. He goes, and just so you know, I'm a man of my word. And I'm like,
the dead man gave you a promise.
Happen. Yeah. and then he followed me on Twitter right after. And I'm like, oh, I think like he actually meant that. So at some point in time, we're going to run it back with The Undertaker in person.
When you get something like that, would you fly out to him?
I fly out to people all the time.
Is it just you by yourself?
Sometimes. Or sometimes if I'm going to a place like Tampa where I did the...
Where you do a bunch of
all
them.
Of those. I did hire someone there. But for the most part, it's me doing actually very similar to what you're doing. Set up the lights, set up the cameras. I usually get a suite in a hotel so I have like some extra space. Otherwise, it's like my... If you look at my old interviews from 4, 5, 6 plus years ago, it's me sitting in front of a bed in a hotel with like just my iPhone on a tripod. So I want them to look a little bit better now. So that's why I have the two single shots set up like that.
Is that you setting it up?
Yeah, for the most part it is now. And as you know, it is very nerve-wracking when you're doing this on your own because you want to be here. You want to be having this conversation that you and I are having right now.
And you see me going.
And I do this all the time because I'm like, is it still recording?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Because I've had it a lot of times when you're sitting there, you're having the conversation. And oh yeah, you were in the, is it the Sony A7?
Yeah, I just got these.
They're the best. So.
And I did like four tests before I actually started using them to make sure they don't like burn out or anything.
So I had it where I didn't have that. I had that one setting where like if it overheated, it would shut off.
It stops.
So I'm in the middle of an interview with Chavo Guerrero. We're like, yeah, you know, we're flowing. It's a great conversation. And I hear, doo-doo-doo. And I'm like, no, the camera stopped. Oh.
Was it his angle or your angle?
It was his angle.
Oh.
I'm like, I'm so sorry. I need to fix this. Yeah, no worries, man. No problem. So I went and fixed it, Googling videos of like, how do I make this not overheat? Oh, it's the simple setting. Beep, 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 boop, beep, boop, 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 boop. Okay, I think we're good. I think we're good. But there's nothing worse than that. Or like early days of like recording on my iPhone, when you had an iPhone that had like a 8 gig capacity, you'd be sitting there and recording, and then I would look over at my screen and it was just black. Oh. Ran out of memory. Please forgive me. I need to delete some things on my phone so that we can make more space to finish this interview. Yeah, man, no problem. Take your time. The amount of grace that I've been given in these interviews is it's very kind. It's very kind and very understanding of the people that I talk with.
Where are you going to record with Rikishi?
At our home? No, that's going to be at WrestleCon. WrestleCon's a big wrestling convention that happens during WrestleMania weekend. So I'm staying at the hotel where WrestleCon is. He's just going to come up to the room and do something there.
WrestleMania predictions.
Oh, boy.
Roman Reigns and The Rock versus Cody Rhodes, Seth freaking Rollins. Who do you think is going to win?
I don't know. It's so hard. This is the best thing about wrestling right now, is really it could go any way, and it's still going to be interesting. And this hasn't been this way in wrestling in a long time. So I mean, I can throw out predictions right now and they will, I mean, they'll either be right or wrong. Like there's really no in between. I've got a 50-50 chance of getting it right. But it's just such an interesting storyline. So if I go with that match, it seems like it would make sense for Cody and Seth to win on night one. But I think a strong case could be made.
For the other way.
They're Roman and Rock. They win, so that's bloodline rules on night two, and then somebody screws somebody, which then means that somebody, I don't know. Like there's a lot of possibilities here. And then when we go to night two, the main event, Cody and Roman, I don't know. I really don't know. I would have to think that Cody wins the match, finishes the story. But I also thought that last year. I thought there was no way we were going to be leaving WrestleMania 39, SoFi Stadium, with Roman Reigns still the champion. And he is. He's still the champion now, a year later. So I don't know. And that's the cool thing about wrestling, is that anything can happen. And the storytelling since Triple H has been in charge has been so, so good that I'm not concerned. I really just want to treat this like a television show where I watch that episode and I can't wait to see the next one. And instead of sitting here like so many wrestling fans do, where they're like, well, if this thing doesn't happen, then I can't believe the direction they're going. I don't know. I don't care. I just want to watch and see what happens and know that the thing that happens today on Raw may have a payoff 3 months from now or 6 months from now, instead of like watching it and like reacting to it in the moment and needing an answer right now. Because I don't watch television shows like that. I just recently finished Succession. And I don't watch it like every episode isn't over going, okay, well, when I turn on this next episode, this character better be doing this thing and they better give us an explanation for that. I just watch it. I just watch it and let it happen.
Roman Reigns versus Cody Rhodes.
I think it has to be Cody. I think that's the only storyline that makes sense to me. But again, I didn't think that Roman was going to win last year at WrestleMania 39 and Roman's still the champion now. I would not be shocked if Roman wins. I think people would be very upset if Roman wins. He's been the champion for like 3.5 years. But anything could happen. And that's the cool thing. But if I had to like sit here right now and give you a prediction, I'm going to go with Cody Rhodes. And I do think that even if Cody Rhodes doesn't win the championship at WrestleMania 40, Cody has already had such an amazing career. Cody will go down as like a multiple-time WWE world champion, whether that's 3 or 5 or 8 or 10, whatever it happens to be. He's 1-0 right now, but he's going to go down as multiple-time. DDP already said like he's a future Hall of Famer. Like he's in a rare club of people who won back-to-back Royal Rumbles. He's a future Hall of Famer. Those are DDP's words. I don't disagree with him. Like Cody's done some amazing stuff. He did amazing stuff in AEW, but since his return to WWE, he has cemented himself as one of the people from this generation. Like when you look at this generation 10, 20, 30 years from now, Cody's going to be one of the guys from this generation.
Who are you going to WrestleMania with?
I'm going there to cover it like as press.
But are you watching it so like by yourself?
No, I'm sitting in the press box.
Okay.
So I'll be with, you know, various other press friends. Yeah. I go every year now. This is my 14th WrestleMania.
14th?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I think it's 14, 13.
Has
yeah.
all of those been covered from doing press stuff?
No, I've only covered last year and this year. I did interviews other years, but I had tickets every other year. Yeah.
And who would you go with? Friends?
We had a trip of three friends, like four of us total, three of my friends. We went every year, no matter where it was. That started at WrestleMania 27. We missed 28. Then it was 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, 34, 35. Nobody went to 36, then 37, 38, 39. I also went to 18 because I'm from Toronto and it was in Toronto. I was there for Rock Hogan. It was incredible.
What was the best live match you ever saw?
Rock versus Hogan.
Really?
No question. No question. That is such an incredible match. And like the first few minutes, they're not even wrestling. They're just staring at each other. And the crowd is going bananas.
Were you going bananas?
Yes. I fully went there. I fully went there intending to cheer for The Rock. The Rock has always been my guy. I would walk down the halls of my high school asking people questions.
Just, it doesn't matter.
Just so I could shout, it doesn't matter. So I went to WrestleMania 18 fully intending to cheer for The Rock. And then Hogan came out and I'm like, oh yeah, you know what? Deep down inside, I really am a Hulkamaniac. And the crowd turned on The Rock, if you remember that match. There was cheers for Hogan, who was a bad guy at the time. Boos for The Rock, who was supposed to be a good guy.
Are you planning out what shirt you're going to wear to WrestleMania? Like, would you wear that day?
That day? Oh, I don't know. Wow. WrestleMania, I mean, I don't remember what I wore to WrestleMania 18.
What are you wearing to this one?
I don't know. Probably just a black t-shirt. I wear a lot of black t-shirts now.
You're not going to rep anybody?
Not if I'm sitting in the press box. Because then I'm going to be at the press conference afterwards, and I don't want to be like wearing a Cody Rhodes or Roman Reigns shirt while I'm sitting there in the press conference talking to the, like, if Roman wins, he's going to be there. And I'm here I am wearing an American Nightmare shirt. Can I ask a question, Mr. Reigns? I don't want to do that.
What are the top three matches ever, in your opinion?
Oh, ever.
Because I heard you go into a debate about this with somebody. I forget who. Was it Chavo?
I don't know.
Oh, no. Paul Walter Hauser. You guys were just discussing it.
It's tough, right? Because wrestling is so subjective. Wrestling's a lot like movies. And Paul Walter Hauser and I got into a deep discussion about like favorite movies. And that can change and shift based on the mood you're in or the other type of films you've been watching.
If you were to tell someone new to wrestling,
yeah, that's,
let's do it that way. That way it's something they can easily digest and just really appreciate.
It's a little bit more objective in that way. I always say Rock Hogan. Like that is my all-time favorite match. That's a great match to show someone who's never watched wrestling either because it is so, like the crowd makes it so obvious what's important in this match and what's not. So Rock Hogan, WrestleMania 18, number one with a bullet. Easy.
Number two?
It's my favorite ever TNA match and one of my favorite matches ever. So it's number two, Christopher Daniels versus AJ Styles versus Samoa Joe, Unbreakable. It was for a long time the only Dave Meltzer five-star TNA match. It's phenomenal. Pardon the pun, because that's AJ Styles' nickname. It's so, so good. And that's one of those matches that if someone's never watched wrestling before, they put that on and they're like, how are these humans doing this? Like, how are they capable of doing this? This is incredible. So that's number two. Number three is hard because there's so many different styles of matches, right? Like TLC, incredible match. Some of the Hell in a Cell is very good, like Undertaker and Mick Foley, an iconic match. But I think if I just have to narrow down to three, those first two were pretty easy for me. If I just have to narrow it down to three, the third one, man, it's so hard because there's so many good ones. It's got to be a Bret Hart match just because everything Bret Hart did in the ring was like quite literally perfect. So I don't know which match it would be, but maybe it's Bret Owen. Maybe it's Bret Bulldog. Maybe it's Bret Mr. Perfect. Bret Hart versus literally anybody should be a match that is required viewing for anybody.
Who do you think did the most for the business?
Hulk Hogan. And I think that anybody in wrestling right now would tell you that. Like, wrestling had the surge of popularity in the 80s into the 90s because of Hulkamania. Like, Hulk Hogan slamming Andre the Giant at WrestleMania 3 was a big turning point for wrestling going from, like, this silly thing that people didn't really watch and talk about to being this very popular thing. So it's Hulk Hogan for sure.
You remember watching that?
I didn't watch that. I didn't watch that live. I would have been 3 years old when that happened. No, I didn't watch that live. And WrestleMania came to the Sky Dome when I was six. I wasn't a huge wrestling fan at that time. It was really the Attitude Era that I got into it. But then you go back and you start to understand like the importance of like, oh, because yeah, I'm 16. Hogan would have been in his late 40s at the time. You understand the importance of what Hogan was doing in WCW, but you didn't really get it because you didn't, you know, I didn't really see everything he did before that. But when you start to get an appreciation for like, oh, that's why he's the guy and he's in the spot that he's in right now, it just really makes you appreciate it. It's kind of very similar now to like how a new wrestling fan or a younger wrestling fan might view Chris Jericho. They might just be seeing the work he's been doing the last 5 years in AEW and not quite fully grasp it. But then when you see everything he did as Lionheart and Y2J and Suit and Tie Guy Jericho and the List Jericho and then the Painmaker and everything else, and you get a full scope of everything he's done, you go, oh, yeah, no, I can appreciate that now.
Who would you say is the most underrated wrestler?
Of all time?
In the past 20 years.
In the past 20 years, the most underrated wrestler of all time. Well, there's so many. Shelton Benjamin's a big one. Like Shelton Benjamin's one of the greatest athletes in the history of pro wrestling. The things that guy can do and make them look so easy is unbelievable. And the fact that that guy never won a world championship in WWE, it just doesn't sit right with me. So that's one for sure. I think Dolph Ziggler, he spent 19 years in WWE. And while he did win world championships there, I think that people really underappreciate how good he was at making other people look good. Like that's a real sign of a great wrestler. Not how great you can look when you're out there. How great can you make your opponent look? How great are you at putting them over when they're winning a match? So those are two that immediately pop into my head right now.
Do you think Ric Flair was one of the best sellers?
Oh yeah. Ric Flair is great selling. Triple H sells so well. Brock Lesnar is a fantastic seller. The way Brock Lesnar sells punches, and you know, you got to remember he's 6'3 and 295 pounds. He doesn't need to be selling for anybody. The way that guy sells is fantastic.
Where do you see wrestling going in the next 5 years, especially with this new switch from Raw to Netflix and SmackDown to USA?
It's going to be really interesting. We're on the cusp right now, I feel like, of wrestling. Just it gets more popular every week. And more people are watching and more new fans are coming in and more lapsed fans are coming back to wrestling. This Netflix deal is not only important for wrestling, this is an important deal for like traditional broadcasting in general. The fact that Netflix was willing to spend $5 billion on a weekly live television program means that they've put a big investment into WWE, like figuratively and literally. Like it's a big investment of their time and their resources. Netflix doesn't do live weekly programming. So the fact that they're going to do 52 weeks of live weekly programming is really interesting.
For the next 10 years, no?
Five.
5 years.
It's going to be interesting because I think that a lot of other people are going to be looking at that. Oh, if live programming can work on a streamer and we're Amazon Prime or HBO Max or something like that, maybe we should be taking notice of this. And Prime did that. You know, Thursday Night Football has been successful for them.
Right.
They also had the Black Friday game last year, which was very successful for them. But can weekly live programming work? I mean, yeah, I think it'll absolutely work.
It just goes to show it really does go in those waves.
Absolutely.
Streaming, back to week.
We'll see. And what's going to be interesting about going to Netflix is, will there be commercial breaks? I don't think so.
So what are they going to do in between matches?
Well, they do it on PLEs, right? They cut to a promo package. They cut to backstage. They cut to a WWE shop.
So you're
commercial.
Really going to be getting 3 hours of nonstop
this
action?
Is the other thing. Is it going to be 3 hours? There was a lot. There's a lot of questions, right?
When does this all start? January?
January. Because if you and I pay for the ad-free version of Netflix, and then we tune in to the live streaming version of Raw on a Monday night, and they're giving us ads, I feel like we're going to be upset about that.
They're going to need some people to fill in those 5-minute gaps, if you know what I'm saying.
I know what you're saying. I'm picking up what you're putting down here.
Do you smell what I'm cooking?
So I think it's going to be very, very interesting. Also, it's not regulated in the same way that traditional broadcasting is.
Right. Are they going to get more Attitude Era?
This is the thing. And that's a fine line to walk, right? Because for so long, for the last 15 plus years, they've been trying to get newer, younger fans. They've been trying to make this more of a global product. Well, if my 6 or 7 or 8 year old loves wrestling, when The Rock comes on, and especially the promos he's been cutting on Instagram, I'd be like, I don't know if I want The Rock, like, you know.
Shut up, bitch.
Dropping all these F-bombs too, right? I don't want my little kid running around the playground yelling shut up bitch at people.
That was the best, when we would wrestle in the playground behind where the lunch ladies couldn't see us. Are you kidding me? Bring
running
it back.
Around telling everyone to suck it.
I'll never forget this kid named Ryan just going to everybody because he loves Stone Cold.
And I wonder if we're gonna get that, because this will not be regulated in the same way on Netflix. So then the decision comes down to Netflix and TKO. Like, what are the decisions that they want to make? Is Netflix going to say, you know what, guys, let's tone this down. Let's make this a little bit more PG. Or is TKO going to say, like, hey, let's try to, you know, make this a show for everybody? Or are they going to go, boy, we had a lot of success when it was TVMA or TV 14.
I feel like it'll be that, because UFC is like pretty crazy.
UFC caters to a totally different audience, though.
But the parent company, no?
It's the same parent company, but it's only been the same parent company for a handful of months. So it'll be very interesting. And I think a lot of people will be watching to see how this is handled. WWE, I don't think enough people give them credit. They've been ahead of the curve for a long time. They were one of the very first to have their own streaming network, the WWE Network, when really nobody else was even thinking about that as an option. They were also the first to sell their streaming network to Peacock and go, yeah, if you're going to give us $1 billion for this, I think it was, we'll go do our own thing and figure something else out. So I feel like a lot of people are watching to see what they're doing.
So does Peacock have all those old matches?
Everything. Yeah, it's basically the WWE Network on Peacock.
And then Raw will just be the new weekly on Netflix.
On Netflix, yeah. And then SmackDown goes to the CW?
I thought USA.
Oh, yeah, that's right, USA. NXT goes to the CW.
What are your thoughts on Jake Paul versus Mike Tyson?
That's going to be so interesting.
Thank you. I think it's going to be incredible.
It's going to be so interesting. And nobody's talking about this. It's free on Netflix.
Another live streaming.
Another massive live streaming event, free with your Netflix subscription.
It's going to be the biggest fight of all time.
It's certainly going to have a lot of people watching, right?
Do you think it'll be the biggest ever? Well, I think it will.
I guess it depends on what the metric is that we're judging this by.
We're judging it by the most eyes watching it, which is on Netflix that everybody has.
Yeah.
And it's free.
I don't know what the biggest fight, you know, up to this point is, but I know a lot of people are going to be watching this.
Neither do I. I just like spitting out random facts.
I don't think they're going to put 80,000 people in AT&T Stadium. I don't know if that's going to happen.
I don't know about that. Probably won't either.
I'd be blown away if they could do that.
But the amount of people that will see the fight, I think, is going to be astronomical.
I really think that this is a lose-lose situation for Jake Paul, though.
I agree. Like, have you seen Mike Tyson?
But it's lose-lose, right? Because if he beats him, It's, oh, you beat a guy who's going to be 58 years old that time.
Oh, I disagree.
Big deal.
I would give him so much credit if he beat Mike Tyson because he's still Mike Tyson.
But he's a 58-year-old Mike Tyson.
Regardless, he's still a killer.
Yes, absolutely. And he will always have that in him. But I think it's lose-lose because you beat him, you beat a 58-year-old man who at one point in time was the baddest man on the planet. If you lose, you've now lost to a 58-year-old man. So it's like it's lose-lose here, I think.
I so disagree because I can't imagine that many people really getting in the ring with Mike Tyson. The only thing that makes sense is Mike Tyson's last fight. I almost feel like he went a little soft on when he was fighting.
Roy Jones Jr.?
Yeah, they both didn't give 100%.
But that was an exhibition.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Is this going to be on the record?
I don't know. That's a great question.
Because if it's another exhibition, then it's like, are they real? They're probably just doing it for the money, obviously.
The thing that you have to respect about Jake Paul, whether you love him or you hate him, he's bringing so many new eyes to boxing. And he's bringing so many new eyes to just combat sports in general. And he's also putting a lot of pressure on Dana White. He's saying, Dana White, how come I'm able to pay your fighters more in one fight than you paid them in their entire UFC career? Something needs to change here. And whether you love him or you hate him, you have to respect the fact that he's putting that pressure on Dana White to pay his fighters better.
As a longtime wrestling fan, what's your thoughts on Logan Paul joining WWE?
Logan Paul he's crushing it. And these are Triple H's words, and they ring so true. He has no business being as good as he is. He's had, what, like 8 matches? And every single match, he looks like he's been doing this for 10, 15, 20 years. He also does something in every match that makes you remember him. Like he has that moment in every single match that you remember when the show's over. You might not remember all the matches on the card, but you remember that one moment. You remember that spot in the Royal Rumble where him and Ricochet meet in the middle, right? You remember the elbow off the top rope with the selfie camera to Roman Reigns. You remember these moments. And whether you love Logan Paul or you hate Logan Paul, he's doing his job.
He's making you feel.
Because at the end of the day, that's what wrestling's all about. Wrestling is all about making you feel something. So I have a tremendous amount of respect for him for not only coming into the WWE and being able to hang, but for coming into the WWE and treating it as seriously as he's been treating it. Like, this is not just some side quest for him. Like, he is a WWE superstar, whether you like it or not. He's a WWE superstar. And every single time he goes out there, he proves a lot of his doubters and a lot of his haters wrong because they all want him to fail. And he goes out there and his promos are solid. His ring work is solid. And again, whether you're booing him or you're cheering him, he's getting you to feel something.
Who are some of the biggest celebrities that joined wrestling that you loved or hated?
So I think that there's like, it's kind of this progression, actually.
I actually have a list right here.
There's a progression, right? Because like David Arquette gets a lot of people upset for what happened in WCW. He became the WCW champion. He'll even tell you like he didn't want to be the champion.
Did that make you angry?
I wasn't a huge WCW fan at the time. So
as a wrestling fan, did it bother you?
Not really. I can understand why Vince Russo did it. If people are still talking about it 25 years later, for better or for worse, he made you feel something. But like David Arquette did, you know, what he did. And I think that even to this day, people ridicule him for that. He definitely made good on it by having the run that he had as an independent wrestler. But then you've got like people like Stephen Amell put the work in. Like Stephen Amell did such a great job. He had a great match at the very first All In right before AEW started with Christopher Daniels. Fantastic match. There's also Bad Bunny. Oh my God. Bad Bunny crushed it. Bad Bunny, so good. Pat McAfee, so good. Logan Paul, so good. I don't even know if Logan Paul falls into the celebrity category anymore. But then you've got some people on the other side of this. Remember when they were doing the guest Raw general manager for a while? Like Jeremy Piven came in and called. Oh, this is so frustrating. Jeremy Piven came in and called SummerSlam the Summerfest. And it's those moments where you're like, okay, like I get that it's live and it's happening and it's, you know, you're feeding off of other people, but you got to get the name of the event right. Like, come on.
Was that real? Or did he do that to ruffle people's feathers?
No, he had no idea what he was saying. Like, yeah, he just said it by the wrong name and they're live. Yeah, so he called it the Summerfest.
Out of all the wrestling interviews, what is one moment that really sticks out to you where you were surprised that the person gave that to you?
I'd have to say this last interview with John Cena. It really felt like nothing was off limits. And we talked for over an hour. And we had a great conversation, but I kept bringing up like big moments from his past.
Of wrestling.
Where he had like never told these stories before. So like I'm sitting there and he could have like glossed over or like, you know, given me a short answer. And like he's going in depth and giving me like 3 to 5 minute, like long thought out, like detailed responses. And I'm just sitting there like, I can't believe this is happening. This is awesome. Like I kind of off the cuff, he mentioned something about wanting to turn heel. And I'm like, how close are we to getting that? He's like, oh, real close. And I'm like, what's the time period here? And he's like, right before Rock Hogan, WrestleMania 28. And I'm like, oh yeah. And then he started going into detail of like, I had a new song and I had these low cut singlets and I wasn't going to look anything like the John Cena you were used to. And that John Cena was all about hustle, loyalty, and respect. And this one would be the opposite. And he was going into detail of like everything he had thought out. And I'm like, he's never told this to anybody else. And when someone like John Cena does a lot of interviews and you're still able to get something new, as you know, as an interviewer, you're just like salivating. You're like, this is the best. This is the best. So that's one of those moments. There was a bunch of like clips during that where he was telling me things. And I was just like, this is crazy that like, I'm the first person to hear this. I can't believe it.
And he kept extending the interview.
He's the best. Yeah.
How long were you supposed to have with him?
1 hour.
You were supposed to have 1 hour.
Yes.
And how long did you get with him?
1 hour and 13 minutes. And so the full story around that is I've interviewed him 4 times before.
All in person.
One of them was virtual when he was hosting a show called True Grit way back.
And what were the other ones, in movie promos or for your podcast?
Two of them were movies. And so one of them was Fast and Furious 9.
Yeah.
Fast and Furious 9. And the other one was Bumblebee. And then one was for like my YouTube channel. It was like 15, 20 minutes. And he extended that interview too. So when the actor strike was going on, I just shot him a text out of nowhere.
You had his number.
Yeah. And it's not like I text John Cena often at all. But I was like, I'm going to shoot my shot here. The actor strike's happening right now. He had returned to wrestling. Like, he's got some time on his hands. So I shot him a message and I said, so cool to see you in wrestling right now. I've done a lot of big interviews this year. Rock, Hogan, Flair, Undertaker. There's just one name that's missing from that. If you have any time over the next few months.
This is all in your text.
Yeah.
When a text goes to John Cena, is it green or blue?
Oh, it better be blue. He wrote me back like later that day and he's like, I'd love to do an interview with you. I actually want to wait until the actor strike is over so I have something to promote. And he's like, this is the best part about him. He goes, definitely follow up with me and don't feel like you're bugging me. Like, I want you to follow up. We're going to make this happen.
That's so cool.
And what a cool thing for anybody to say, especially someone in John Cena's position. But like, yeah, definitely like keep hitting me up because we're going to make this happen and don't feel like you're bothering me. Amazing. Then he shoots me a message like a month or two later and he's like, I think I'm going to be in LA for these dates. I'm going to be at the Iron Claw premiere.
He reached out to you out of nowhere.
Yeah. I'm going to be at the Iron Claw premiere. And I'm
where
like,
are you when you're getting this text?
I don't know. It's probably at the gym or something, like hyperventilating. Like,
everyone's like, do you need help?
I do remember later on in that day, because we went back and forth a few times that day. I remember later on that day driving with my wife and we have a truck and it, like, we have Apple CarPlay. So the texts come through like on the screen. We're driving along and like on the screen message John Cena. I'm like, can you believe this? What world do I live in that John Cena is texting me right now? So he was like, I'm going to be at the Iron Claw premiere. I don't know how much time I'll have there, but I hope to see you there. And I ended up getting invited to the Iron Claw premiere in LA. I saw him there, but he didn't have time to do an interview. But he's the best. He makes time for everybody. So he saw me. He came on off the red carpet after he did the photos and the interviews, quick interviews on the red carpet. He saw me and he was like, oh, hey, man, what can I do for you? And I'm like, what can you do for me? Like, what can I do for you? And he's like,
F5 me right now. Yeah.
He's like, I know that we talked about doing something. I'm so sorry. Like, as soon as this is over, I'm leaving. But what can I do for you right now? I've got like 2-3 minutes. I'm like, could we take a photo? He's like, F yeah, we could take a photo. So we go to the red carpet. We take a photo. He's super kind. And he's like, man, congrats on all your everything you're doing right now. And I'm like, congrats to me. Congrats to you. And he's like, and we will do the next one in person. Keep texting me. Let's follow up. Let's make this happen. And sure enough, for the interview that we did, he's like, I'm going to be in town February 12th and 13th. Let's do something. And it was for his movie called Ricky Stenicki on Amazon Prime, which is hilarious, by the way. That movie's great. And Amazon Prime set everything up. And they were like, how much time do you need? I'm like, like 30 to 45 minutes would be great. And they're like, all right, well, we'll get you for 30 minutes. And I'm like, sure, perfect. Then when they sent me the schedule, it was from 3 to 4 p.m. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like that means he requested an hour.
Wow.
Yeah. And at the 55 minute mark, this guy came in behind, like he was going to be right behind like my eye line with a sign that said 5 minutes. And that's when John Cena was like, this guy's coming in here with a sign to tell you you got 5 minutes left. We're going to keep going. Okay. What a guy.
That's crazy.
What a guy.
What's this drink here?
F3 Energy.
I have Tropical Theory, and this is...
That's my favorite flavor.
Okay.
I've been drinking the Citrus Clarity, which is more like a 7-Up, I guess, Sprite okay. type of thing. That one's like almost like a high C.
Is it carbonated?
Yeah. Yeah, it's an energy drink.
Theanine, BCAAs.
Yeah, it's great ingredients in it. And only 120 milligrams of caffeine.
Oh, perfect.
Because so many of these are like, you're drinking like rocket fuel.
Yeah.
And I've never been a huge caffeine person. But I love F3 Energy. My buddy Harrison started this company.
First off, I love that it's fizz. This is delicious.
That flavor is so good. That flavor is so good.
Oh, wow. Oh, cheers. Wow. Cheers to you.
Cheers to you. So is the main one of your favorite pop punk bands?
Yeah, it's Blink-182, Story So Far, the main.
Wow.
Those are top three of all time. I met Mark Hoppus recently.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was unreal.
Where'd you meet him?
At an event. I walked in and I looked to my left and I swear he heard my gasp. I go, and I do that for every time I see somebody like that I'm such a fan of. I was at a acai place in Arizona and my wife goes, turn around. And I go, it's Frankie Muniz.
Ah, wow.
And right in front of him too. I have to stop doing that. I don't know why I keep doing it. I think it's just because I'm so like... theatrical for whatever reason that I just am. But then like I tone it down, whatever. And I ended up talking to him. And
that's awesome.
It was so cool.
Pop punk was like the soundtrack of my like probably 18 to 30.
Uh-huh. It still is for me.
I don't listen to it as much now. I listen mostly to podcasts. I don't listen to a ton of music. But
every day, pop punk. Neck Deep, did you listen to their new album?
I didn't know they had a new album.
You have to listen to it on Neck the way Deep. Home. I'm going to send it to you now.
Please.
It's so good.
For me, it was like Blink-182, Sum 41, Yellow Card, Simple Plan, Hawthorne Heights, Story of the Year.
Yep.
The Dangerous Summer is one of my favorite bands. They're so good. Oh, man. In the back of my mind, I thought... You don't want to hear me sing, but I love AJ Perdomo. He's such a great singer.
Yeah.
So that was very much it for me. Like, I was... Yeah, like I borderline, I was like very much into the emo / like light screamo.
Yeah.
And obviously.
Census Fail was like as heavy. Data yes. Remember is as heavy as I go. I do love Slipknot though.
I like Slipknot, but I would probably listen to a Census Fail album like, man, that one album. So let's play Dr. Babe.
Yeah.
That song's
Let
so
It
good.
Unfold You.
Oh man. That so album's good. Amazing.
When you met the main... Were you stoked for them?
Yes, because I met them, like, I think it was right after album 2 or 3. So, like, still kind of early on in their journey. And then they've evolved into being what they are now. Yeah, so stoked for them. Also stoked for me that I was, like, having a conversation with them.
Yeah.
There's something about meeting the person who inspires you or makes you feel a certain way. And music's really special, right? Because music takes you back to a time and to a place. Like, it's very specific in that way. And when you can talk to the person who created that piece of art that allows you to feel that certain way, there's a real connection there. Because the idea behind it, right? If I'm a singer-songwriter, I'm sitting in my bedroom or on the tour bus, like literally pen to paper, just like my thoughts, and then get with the rest of the band and we put a melody to it. Like, these are my thoughts that have now become a song, and they're going to go out there and touch the lives of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people. There's something like really special about that.
What band would you be dying to have the entire, all the members to talk to?
Blink-182. Like, if I was able to have Tom, Mark, and Travis, that'd be just amazing. And the fact that they're back together, yeah, that's the one.
Me too. I'd have so much to ask. And when I met Mark, I was like so thrown off and nervous, and I really shanked it for myself. But if I had like the time to actually think about it, like, I bought Mark's signature bass when I was in seventh grade, and that's what got me into music. It was $500, and I remember saving my money for it. I'm like, why didn't I tell him that? He was like, what do you do? I'm like, I eat food in my car, which I used to do mukbangs, but I didn't do any at the time. I'm like, why tell him about your podcast? Why aren't you talking about your podcast? I didn't. I was so nervous.
And I think that that happens when you meet someone in that setting, right?
Yeah, because I didn't.
You're not prepared.
I also didn't see many people go up to him to where it was okay to take a photo and chat with him. He was kind of like doing his own thing with his wife, which it wasn't the setting necessarily to go up and do that. So I was kind of waiting to see if it was okay.
There's also there's different levels of fame, right? Like, if Julia Roberts was there, everyone would be like, that's Julia Roberts. That's crazy.
Right.
You have to be a pretty big Blink-182 / pop punk fan to recognize Mark Hoppus now, right? In the same way that, like, if you're a massive Cleveland Browns fan and you're like able to spot a defensive lineman, like, you know, with his helmet off and no number on his back, name on his back, you have to be deep into that world. So, like, if you're a big fan of Senses Fail, I don't know if I'd even know what the lead singer looks like, you know? So, like, that's the interesting thing about it.
So interesting.
Whereas, like, if Brad Pitt walked into the party, everyone would be like, what the heck? It's Brad Pitt, you know?
I remember seeing Mark Hoppus at the Jurassic World premiere too.
What, really?
Yeah, and I didn't say hi to him then. And I've been at Disney when he was there, and I'm trying to find him. I know I sound like a stalker, but I'm really not.
I went to the premiere of this J-Lo movie last year, and I'm in the bathroom before the movie washing my hands, and I look up, and in the mirror, I see Michael Bisping, you know, UFC fighter.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Bisping! And he's like, hey, man, do I know you? And I'm like, I don't think so, but what are you doing here? He's like, I'm here to see the movie. I'm like, I guess the answer is the same for me too. I'm here to see the movie. But it's just like, when you see someone in a setting that you're not expecting them to see them in.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's always so interesting.
I saw Scottie Pippen at a farmer's market. He sticks out.
Of course.
Yeah. And for them, there was a bunch of kids taking photos, so I knew it was okay to go up to him. And I said his name. He didn't hear me. I turned around. And then as I turned around, he turned around. And my wife was like, what are you doing? I'm like, nah, let's just go. She's like, no, he turned around. And I turned around. He turned back around. Missed opportunity. Well, who else do you have coming up on your pod that you're excited for?
There's a bunch at WrestleMania week that I'm trying to like lock down the times for.
Are you in cahoots with them now?
Yes. So if everything goes to plan, I'll be able to talk to Becky Lynch there.
Chad, do you have her book yet?
Yeah, I'm like halfway through it.
Are you reading it?
Yes.
Okay.
It's so good. Have you read it?
No, I'm waiting for the Audible.
Yeah, it's not out yet, I don't think.
It's not out.
It's out this week, I think.
She's not coming to LA anymore?
I'm sure she'll be in LA at some point.
She's doing a book signing at the Grove.
Oh.
You should.
But it's like mid-April.
Yes.
I'm going to do this with her before then. Okay. So if everything goes well, Becky Lynch, Chad Gable and I have been talking, trying to figure out a time. So that will be one that happens. Braun Strowman, Carmella.
She's going to be there WrestleMania weekend?
She's going to be there WrestleMania weekend. Earl Hebner.
That's iconic. Yeah,
that's going to be good. Another really big one, I've done an interview with him before, but he very rarely does interviews, is Muhammad Hassan.
Wow.
And I have his number, so I texted him. I'm like, I see that you're at WrestleCon. Would you want to do an interview? He's like, yeah, of course. So what an interesting story. What an interesting character, too.
Yeah.
And a lot of people who don't know anything about wrestling would hear this and maybe be confused about it. But right after 9/11, he played a Muslim American. Well, he is. But it's like, you boo me. I'm from Michigan and you're booing me because of where like my family is from. And it was such an introspective look at like the world that existed at that time, like 2002. And it was just so interesting that like he's saying all of these things that if you watch it back, like there was a lot of truth to them, but he's getting booed because of just the setting of the world at that point in time. And really, like really, really interesting character.
Have you ever met anyone who hated being the villain?
Oh, by the way, he's a high school principal now.
That's yeah. sick. Imagine yeah. your principal being him.
He's so jacked too. Anyone?
Of course he is.
I don't know anybody. I don't think I've never known anybody who hates being a heel, because there's something really fun about like you're saying things you're not really supposed to say. You don't have to be politically correct. You're, yeah, like when you're the good guy, I think you have to walk that line of like making sure that everything you do is virtuous.
Hits all the check boxes.
Yes. And when you're a bad guy, everybody has that side in them. So I think it's fun to like say the things you're not supposed to say and do the things you're not supposed to do. The only thing I've heard from anybody who's been a babyface for a long time that turns heel is they don't like to buy merchandise from a bad guy.
Yeah, why is that?
I think it's just the thing, right? Like, why would you wear the shirt of someone who does these things that aren't virtuous, does these things that aren't good?
But wouldn't you consider Stone Cold the bad guy?
No, no. He did turn heel. The end of WrestleMania 17, he turned heel. Remember, he aligned himself with Vince McMahon? And he had the Disturbed version of his entrance theme. Do you remember that?
No.
Oh, man, that's a great song. So it was the same song, but Disturbed remixed it. No, I think the idea is, like, it's easy to cheer for a good guy. And it's easy to, like, wear the good guy's shirt. So, like, you don't, yeah, merchandise doesn't sell very well if you're a heel.
That's really interesting.
That's just a thing.
Are you surprised that DX is running the companies now?
So true. Yeah, it's crazy. But
Shawn Michaels at NXT, Triple H at WWE, everything.
But think about it. They're two of the best minds in wrestling, maybe ever. So, I mean, it's fascinating to think.
You think this was their plan all along?
Of course not. But it's amazing to think that 25 years ago, the people that were telling you to suck it, and Shawn Michaels doing, man, he pushed the envelope a lot. It's crazy to think that those are the people that are in charge now. And those are the people that are like really helping to breed this new generation.
When I close my eyes and think back to those times, I picture Kurt Angle pulling out the milk truck, Hardcore Holly in the back having the Anywhere Falls matches, Booker T, Stone Cold in the supermarket, yeah. Like all those ridiculous things happening. And it was such a fun time to watch.
So good. And I think we need to appreciate that the good old days that we're talking about now of the Attitude Era, what we're living in right now with this current era of wrestling is the good old days. And it's hard to just take one half step back and appreciate things for what they are, instead of trying to look for meaning in every little thing and trying to follow the storyline and being upset about things that happen. And fans of everything do that, right? It's not just wrestling. It's fans of Lord of the Rings, and it's fans of every sport. Like, that's a thing that happens when you're a fan of something. But we need to realize that what's going on right now in wrestling is really special. So, like, just take a second during Raw or Dynamite or Collision or SmackDown. Just take a second to appreciate it, because it's not always going to be this awesome. And right now, man, they are firing on all cylinders.
Chris, thanks so much for coming by.
Thank you for having me, man. This was great.
This is so much fun.
Feel like we should go play some pop punk music now.
Yeah. Simple plan.
Let's do it. I'm just a kid.
Oh, what were you saying before about Canada? Broadcasting rules?
Yeah, there's
this. This is the most mind-blowing thing I've ever heard.
Oh, it's called CanCon.
What is CanCon?
CanCon is that every hour on a radio station, you have to play at least 30% or 35% of an artist that is Canadian. So that means you're getting a lot of Justin Bieber, Simple Plan, Nickelback, Shania Twain every hour.
It just has to be like that?
Yeah, well, I think it's just to make sure that the Canadian grown talent still has a chance, right? They're making room for this talent there.
Is that the FAA rule or the Canadian FAA?
Yeah, whatever the CRTC, I think it's called. Yeah. Yeah, that's a rule. It's a, I guess, a law.
Does that go for TV as well?
Yes. So like, we had Much Music in Canada.
I used to watch that.
You watched Much Music?
Yeah, it was like Channel 58. It was like MTV, BET, MTV2, Much Music.
Do you remember any of the VJs that were on at that time?
If you said the names, but didn't it turn into Fuse after a while?
In America, it did.
Okay.
In Canada, I believe it's still Much Music.
Okay.
George Strombolopoulos, Rick Campanelli, like those were like two of the really big names at that time.
Don't remember.
So, yeah, no, that was like...
Because they had really good countdowns.
Yeah, they did. Those were core memories as a kid who grew up in Canada.
That's probably why I always remember watching Sum 41 on there. That's probably. So funny.
Yeah. Sum 41 was from like 10 minutes from where I lived. There were other like pop punk Canadian bands like Not By Choice, Stereos, like that were huge in Canada that just didn't really have a chance to make it in the US because, I don't know, they just didn't for whatever reason.
That's what I want to talk to Sum 41 about. Making the jump over here,
it's huge. Like, and it's not just a thing in music. Like, if you can make the jump in any career path, whether you're an actor or you're a comedian or a director or a TV host, like to go from Canada to the US is a huge step up, because unfortunately just the population in Canada is so much smaller that there's not as many opportunities there.
Right?
You come to the US and my goodness, you've got 10 times the population, at least 10 times the opportunities.
Right. Your channel's awesome.
You're awesome. Thank you for being you. Congratulations on everything you've done.
Is it weird being on the other side of it?
It's a little weird that I'm not the one asking the questions. I should be asking the questions.
Did you come in here with a blank slate in your brain of like, oh, I don't have to do anything?
Yeah, and it was great. I was driving over here. I'm like, I don't have to prepare anything.
That's so funny.
It's so much better this way.
That's so funny.
Who's your next wrestling interview?
Possibly Ivar. Possibly Charlotte Flair. Possibly Becky Lynch. Possibly, I forget who else. I have to look at the
Those are
the
some
DMs.
Big ones.
They'd be so cool.
John Morrison lives about 7 minutes from here.
That's probably the one that's actually supposed to happen.
Yeah, that'll happen.
That was because I was in talks with Taya about that.
And Christopher Daniels lives close-ish.
I really wanted to get Rikishi.
Yeah, that should happen.
I emailed him. I haven't heard back yet.
That should happen.
Because I'm surprised you haven't gone to a school. You should go do something there.
I'm doing something with him in Philly for WrestleMania, and it's just like, finally. Like, what a career he's had.
Would you ask for a stink face?
No. No. I don't think so.
You don't want the finisher?
I think I'll pass on that one.
You see Rhea Ripley did it the other day?
I sure did. I think everybody saw that.
It's so funny.
She is, everything she touches turns to gold right now. I mean, she is that character, and that character is her, and it is the perfect meshing of both things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, guys, Chris's links are going to be linked down below. Make sure to go subscribe, follow, like, comment. Thanks so much for watching.
You're awesome.
You're awesome. Lightweights, out. Thank you so much. That was great.
Dude, that was fantastic.
Can I just take thumbnails of your face?
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.